The world is changed. I feel it in the water. I feel it in the earth. I smell it in the air. Much that once was lost, for none now podcast who remember it.
That's right, because your geek history lesson on the Fellowship of the Ring is now in session.
You shall listen!
Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I am Jason, son of Ecthalion, son of Gondor, third generation of Isildur, straight from Mordor and around the Sauron's Pass Inmen. Welcome to your Mind University, because this is Geek History Lesson, the podcast where we take one character, one story, one construct, and teach you everything you need to know about it in pop culture in a little bit less than an hour, sometimes more than an hour. And today is a very special episode because today we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of a little film that I don't think enough people talk about. I mean, you know, everybody's talking about Harry Potter. Everybody's talking about Spider-Mans. Everybody's talking about, you know, the Batmans and the Supermans. But I don't think there's enough love out there for Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Do you know who Ecthalion is?
No.
How did you pull that name?
Because I've heard it. I've seen this because I've seen this movie.
I was like genuinely impressed.
Who is Ecthalion?
Ecthalion is a lord of Gondolin who kind of oversaw its rise and fall in the First Age.
See, it sounds like you're describing the workings of an automobile engine.
He was the original wielder of Orcrist, who you see a little later on in the
novel. I've heard it said in the movie.
Yeah, it's a great name. Yeah. I was like so impressed.
Well, listeners, we are already a step ahead that I've impressed Ashley. So this is very special because we have a lot of personal connections to this movie. As you may or may not know, Ashley Victoria Robinson here loves The Lord of the Rings. She's read all the bookies. Mm-hmm. She's read all the secret essays. Mm-hmm. She's written Lord of the Rings fan fiction. That's correct, Ashley, right?
Oh, in the before times. Yes.
Yes.
You cannot find it.
Can you reveal what was your fan? You said you made yourself a character.
Oh, yeah, of course.
What did you make yourself?
You got to be Arwen and Aragorn's daughter. Who's better to be?
So what's her name?
I will not tell you that.
Oh, because that's how people can find it?
I will absolutely not tell you that. Because that might still be Googleable.
Okay, listeners. All right. So you have a little bit of a challenge out there. You might be able to find Ashley Victoria Robinson's fan fiction.
I don't even think the platform that I wrote it on exists anymore.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Read it on Zanga?
No.
Remember that old play thing?
I don't. Actually, I never had a Zanga.
Zanga's just like bad blogs, basically. It's like lame Tumblr is what it was.
Yeah, but Tumblr's lame Tumblr now.
That's true. Anyways, we're talking about Lord of the Rings. It's going to be very exciting, you know, because this is a movie that... So it's so interesting. I think the first 10 years of this movie, I don't think it got the respect it deserved. Mm-hmm. And now I feel we're finally getting a little bit of that nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I feel like now people treat this movie as basically this to me, more than Harry Potter, was the Star Wars of the 2000 generation.
Yeah, this one also has like a markedly less problematic creator, which is saying something because the man was born in the first half of the 20th century.
Oh, you're talking about the J.R.R. Tolkien. I don't understand.
J.R.R. Tolkien is less problematic than J.K. Rowling.
Oh, okay. I was comparing to George Lucas. I was like, George Lucas does lots of charity work. How is he problematic? Okay, fair. Yes.
And I think it's just ironic because, you know, he's from a very different generation.
Yeah, he fought in World War I.
He certainly did.
Okay, so this is going to be just like some of our retrospective episodes you guys have learned. We're going to talk a little bit about the movie. This is not about like name checking everything in the movie, being like, remember that thing?
We're also not going to go deep into plot or deep into plot details because the movie is only 3 hours long.
And you can watch it. Yeah, there you go.
Or you can do yourself something better and like watch the extended cut.
Was this suggested by anybody?
This was not suggested by nobody. This was suggested by my brain.
And me. I think I was the one that I was like, we need to do this.
Yes, you were the one who said that we needed to do the film retrospective.
Yes.
I definitely wanted to do a Lord of the Rings something.
Yes. All right, so let's get into the first section of the podcast, the 10-cent origin, where Ashley is going to give you the cliff notes, the little small versions. If you ever find yourself at 111th birthday party at the Shire, and somebody says, hey, what's this Lord of the Rings book that Frodo Baggins wrote about? And you can give them all the answers.
It's actually debatable whether Frodo wrote all of Fellowship of the Ring or whether Bilbo wrote the first couple chapters because it's much more in the style of The Hobbit, which Bilbo wrote.
We're getting in the weeds here, Ashley.
This is going to be great. Lord of the Rings, : The Fellowship of the Ring is a 2001 epic fantasy adventure film. It was directed by Peter Jackson and is, of course, based on the 1954 book, The Fellowship of the Ring, the first volume in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, not his first work in this world. The Hobbit had come out before this, and even though it was published in 1954, he very famously had been working on it for a long time before then. It is a screenplay by Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, and Philippa Boyens. They, as a trio, work pretty exclusively together, but this was their big breakout. It stars Elijah Wood, Ian McKellen, Viggo Mortensen. I'm going to say et al. Because there are 20,000 people in this movie that you will recognize.
Yep.
It has music by Howard Shore and was originally produced by Wingnut Films. Wingnut is Peter Jackson's production company, if anyone's not familiar. And New Line Cinema, back when New Line Cinema was still a cool independent entity, and was originally distributed by New Line, has since been absorbed
by Warner Brothers.
By WB, which is why they produced The Hobbit, was released on December 10th, 2001, and December 19th in the United States. And the running time is 178 minutes. Not enough, if you ask me.
Oh, boy.
The budget was $93 million. I repeat, the budget was $93 million, which is so many millions of dollars, but stacking this next to something like Avengers.
But give the box office.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Is nothing. Like, well, it is in a, this is considered a low budget for the genre and for the scale upon which it was made. Yep.
Even for the time.
Yes.
It was low budget.
Which is why when you look at a lot of these actors, this is the movie that made their, they were, these made are a lot of working actors and a lot of young actors.
Yeah. No, the budget of the first Avengers film in 2012 was $250 million.
Yeah. And this was 93.
Yep.
And they invented technology that movies like Avengers are using now. And the box office was $897.7 million. So even though people may not know this, but in this development, it was always, they were always signed for three movies. They were always producing three movies, and the three movies were made concurrently. Even if that hadn't been the case, they were definitely getting a sequel after this. But I would also like to point out that $897.7 million is not a billion. A billion is a post-Avengers 1 marker, which we put on films. If you don't make a billion, you're worthless. And I would just like to say that that's not true. Mm-hmm. And you could make a movie that literally changes cinema and not make $1 billion.
To me, you just have to double your budget.
Exactly.
If you double your budget, you're fine.
Good. Yep. You're totally good. Mm-hmm. And so that is your 10 cent origin on The Lord of the Rings.
Awesome. Well, listeners, if you do want some more Lord of the Rings talks, we got some good stuff. We're going to be recording an episode of Geek Hush Lesson Extra, which is our Patreon exclusive podcast. That is where we go more in depth onto the Geek Hush Lesson subject. And we're going to be talking about actors who almost starred in Lord of the Rings. We're going to be going through some of the alternate cast scenes and talking about whether we think that would have been good, better, or worse than the main cast. And you can listen to that over at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. And listeners, we're going to have some cool stuff coming up in 2022 over at the Patreon. I'll just give you a fair warning over here. If you haven't gone over there and signed up with it, not only do you support the podcast, not only do you get access to our cool Discord, and you get to listen to Jason and Jeremy John about Justice League, our Justice League animated series review podcast, and Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures, where we just did an episode talking about how we started collecting action figures, and we got a lot of positive comments. Really great episode. You can listen to those. So you get like seven extra podcasts a month.
Sometimes almost 10.
Yeah. Next year, there's going to be some new stuff. There might be some videos that are exclusive to the Patreon. Also, I will tell you, I'll give a little wink, wink, wink. We do have a secret mail level over there, and it's our highest tier. And we have reached out to an artist. And I will tell you, if you're in the secret mail level next year, you're going to be getting some really cool art prints.
Exclusive.
Some art prints that you can only get through the Patreon based on GHL characters.
And dun, dun, dun.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool, guys. It's going to be really cool. So come over there, check that out at the patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. And we appreciate and love and wish a happy holidays to all our patrons that do.
Yeah.
And if you don't, happy holidays to you too.
Yeah, fine. Whatever.
So, Ashley, let's get to the meet cute. That's where we talk, where we meeted and cuted this movie.
Yeah.
So
you should go first.
I should?
You should. Where did you first watch The Fellowship of the Ring?
I first saw Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, in Iola, Kansas.
Have I been there?
I'm pretty certain you've driven through it.
Okay.
It was the closest, like, sort of multi, and I wouldn't even call it a multiplex. It had, like, four screens.
Yeah.
But it had Lord of the Rings. I saw this with my little sister, Katie, because we used to always do the thing that on Thanksgiving and Christmas, we would go see a movie. And that same year for Thanksgiving, we saw Harry Potter and we enjoyed the first Harry Potter movie. So we were like, hey, let's take, it was weird because 2001 was,
it was Harry Potter was Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, and then Lord of the Rings was Christmas because December 19th.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it was both sort of fantasy, both, you know, kind of.
And one was good and one is a movie.
Yeah. But I will say in 2001, I really liked the first Harry Potter movie. And I don't want to talk about Harry Potter anymore. I don't care. And I don't think these franchises are comparable at all.
I agree.
Just because they both have magic. I don't think they're comparable. I actually think Lord of the Rings is like more comparable to something like Conan the Barbarian than.
I think it's more comparable to Dune, honestly.
Yeah, there you go. But we took the risk on Lord of the Rings because we enjoyed Harry Potter. And yeah, both a year of two literary giants being adapted into movies.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, in 2001, I enjoyed them both.
I enjoyed them both in 2001 as well.
This made me, because I hadn't to this point, I had read The Hobbit, I had not read The Lord of the Rings. I read all the Lord of the Rings books after seeing this movie. Ashley, how did you see this movie?
So, up to this point in my life, I had been a diehard Harry Potter fan, and I thought that the Lord of the Rings movie looked scary, because I was very young. And so I said, I would not like to see that, please and thank you. And my dad had read The Hobbit to me when we were younger.
Sure.
But I didn't really know anything about Lord of the Rings. So, the summer of 2002, we were moving, and my mom had a friend with very nasty children who were out for the summer vacation. So we had a couple months where we had to move out of one house before we could move to our new house in a different city. So we stayed in their house. And I guess house set? I don't really know why we were there.
Okay.
But I remember her son being
stealing.
A real asshole.
Like the tricksy hobbits.
No. They did have a trampoline though, which I thought was very cool. And they had Lord of the Rings and we watched it. And I had a friend who had come to like sleep over or hang out or something. And when the Uruk-hai is born for the first time, she cried. So we had to turn it off. And I've never been more furious as a child.
Because you wanted to keep going.
This like changed my life. Like, you know, those moments in your life where you can feel like your brain expanding and you're like, I am leveling up as a person. Like, that's what this was for me. Like when you experience something and you're like, this feels like it was made only for me. That was my experience with The Lord of the Rings. So then we moved. I still have them and the spines are not broken. The 3-box mass market paperback set that have the movie covers of The Lord of the Rings, read them immediately. This became my favorite thing in the world. And I learned that Elijah Wood was 19 when he was cast to play Frodo. And I was like, oh, that's not that much older than me. I should be an actor. And that's why I decided to become an actor, is because of The Lord of the Rings. And I will say that I've met two hobbits and I haven't met Elijah Wood yet. And Jason has, and I'm so jealous.
He's very short.
Yeah, he's like 5'7".
I tower over him.
In your picture, you look like Aragorn about to say Frodo on your horse, for
Hello,
sure.
Hello, Frodo.
Yeah.
No, he was, I will say, you know, I don't mean to name, he was lovely. He was very lovely.
You didn't
lovely.
Name drop, I name dropped.
I will say this too, when he came, this is when I was working at Defy Studios, which doesn't exist anymore. He came and he took a picture with anybody that asked. And everybody else.
Yeah, of course. But that's because, one, he's a professional, and he's obviously a nice guy.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't do that if you weren't a nice guy.
Yeah.
And that's how you get to work in this town. Yeah. So there you go. That's my, and then it was all downhill from there, and I've read every Lord of the Rings thing since then.
All right, cool.
Multiple times.
So let's get into the main discussion of this movie retrospective of The Lord of the Rings. Now, obviously, there are going to be spoilers, but also this movie is 20 years old, yo.
Yeah. Also, the book is like over 60 years old. It's almost 70 years old. So get over it. Yeah.
So how are we going to kick this off, Ashley?
So I want to start out. I thought about going through the plot, but most people know the plot. Most people have seen this movie at least once.
Yeah. This is where two elves crash on Tatooine, right? And they're looking for Frodo.
One of my favorite memes, speaking of two elves, is, if you ever feel useless, remember that Galadriel had a husband, because Celeborn has like two lines in the cinematic cut. So I'm just imagining them crashing onto Tatooine.
And the actor that plays Celeborn in this movie later becomes the villain
of Into
the Badlands.
Wherein he's great, and he's great as Celeborn, but Celeborn just has like, Galadriel's the power in that
couple. Fun fact, listeners, when Ashley and I watched the first season of Into the Badlands, we kept staring at this guy and we were like, how do we know him? And then we were like, oh, it's Lord of the Rings. He's really good.
He's really good. I want to ask you before we dive into this, because I know my answer is going to be very different than yours.
Yes.
Were you familiar with any of the actors in this movie? Was there anyone in this movie where you were like, oh, I know them from something? I'm assuming you're going to at least say Sean Bean.
Many of them.
Yeah.
Actually, I knew most of this cast, actually.
So I knew nobody in this
movie. I can tell you, Ian McKellen, I knew mainly because of Apt Pupil.
Oh, wow.
Yes, because
Apt Pupil. What a pull.
Yep, Apt Pupil, which is a great movie.
Great movie.
Where he plays the secret Nazi.
Yeah.
Because that was before Magneto. I, of course, knew him because of Magneto. I knew Hugo Weaving because of The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Sean Bean because of James Bond and a billion other films.
Did you know Ian Holm?
Yeah, because Alien.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones I didn't know was, I did not know Orlando Bloom. Mm-hmm. I didn't know Dominic Monaghan.
Well, it's both of their first thing.
I didn't know Billy Boyd. But like Sean Astin, of course, Rudy.
I knew Sean Astin because my dad loved Rudy.
Viggo Mortensen, when I saw Viggo, I remembered him from Crimson Tide.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Because he's the engineer.
Yes, he is. He gets his face blown off.
Yeah, and he's also in, he's in a lot of military. He's in that Demi Moore
military. He's in G.I. Jane. Yes, he is. Yeah, yeah.
But most of the cast I sort of recognized as like character actors. Because John Rhys-Davies is from Indiana Jones.
John Rhys-Davies is from the Disney series You Wish, in my opinion.
So that's interesting. So no, I recognize this cast. I saw this cast as mostly character actors.
So for me, this was kind of my first adult movie. This was the first movie that wasn't like actually made for children that I remember really, really watching. So I hadn't seen the first X-Men movie yet. Mm. I hadn't seen The Matrix yet. I didn't see Alien until last year or the year before. When did we watch Alien?
Last year. Yeah.
So for me, this like opened the door on a lot of actors whose careers I went down the rabbit holes of later.
It's a great cast.
It's a stellar, in my
cast.
Opinion, there's like a handful of casting choices that I don't necessarily think are the strongest, but I don't think there's anyone in these movies who's bad. They make choices that I don't love for characters.
May I ask you?
Yes.
Is there someone in Fellowship? Because I want to keep it to Fellowship.
Yes.
Let's not move up to the other two movies. Is there somebody in Fellowship that you were like, I don't know why you were cast?
In terms of the casting, no. There is writing on characters that I'm a little perplexed by.
Writing? Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But we can get to that.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to hear your thoughts, especially since you are very versed in all the Tolkien literary work as well.
Yes. And it's funny. And I think
that's something that's not really taught. Because I would argue, Ashley, that this is a great adaptation of a novel.
This is, okay, if you ever want to understand the value of adaptation, this is the movie to look at. Because I love Tolkien, and the older I get, the more I like, because I love reading about Gondor is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
The White Tree of Gondor is one of my favorite pieces of iconography. If I was ever going to get a corporate item tattooed on my body, it would be the White Tree of Gondor. But like, I love reading the passages about why the tree is white and what it means and its symbology and its history and who brought it over and why it came with seven stars and seven stones. But I understand that that's not for everyone. And Peter Jackson, Philippa Boyens, and Fran Walsh do a really great job at picking out the most important aspects. And I will die on this hill. Cutting Tom Bombadil from the movies was the right choice.
It was the 100%
right
choice.
It was the right choice.
You should explain, just in case anybody doesn't know, in case somebody's only seen the movies and they've not read the books, who is Tom Bombadil and why do you think that was a good choice?
So when the hobbits leave the Shire
for
the first time, they come across a character named Tom Bombadil who is...
He sings.
He does sing. He is this sort of weird hobbit wizard guy who lives on his own, separate from society, in hobbit society. You're considered very strange if you are an outcast or if you are from far away. So Merry's family lives technically outside of the Shire, the Brandywines, the Brandybucks. They live in Brandywine. So they are considered strange because they don't live in the confines of Hobbiton. So Tom Bombadil is like the weird guy who lives on the outskirts of town, but we know he's harmless and like makes medicine. And he's got an elf girlfriend named Goldberry. So when the hobbits...
Goldberry!
So when she's a babe. Elf. He's punching up.
She's the babe because he's definitely punching up.
That would be a great Bond poster. Just Tom Bombadil and like Goldberry in the yep. background with flowers in her hair. So when the hobbits leave the Shire, it's sort of the smooth transition before they get into the really scary... It's their last great... refuge.
It's the first thing that pushes them outside their box.
So they go to his house and hang out a little bit, and they have a bath, and then lay naked in the grass for a bit, and then he sends them on, that's true, that's yep. in the book.
And he sings a lot.
He sings a lot to them, and then he sends them on their way. And like, it's great, and it's magical, and the myth around Tom Bombadil and what he does is all very interesting, but it's why taking out the Burning of the Shire was the right call as well.
That's on this movie, actually.
No, I know. That's a Return of the King discussion, but like, it's...
Just delete that, listeners.
It stopgaps...
That's spoilers.
...the thrust, which is like, the movie really makes this, and the books do too, but the books have different POV chapters. The movie's like, this is Frodo's story.
Yep.
It's Frodo's story, and then it's Frodo and Aragorn's story, ultimately.
It's very similar to the Denis Villeneuve Dune.
Dune, yes.
Where it makes
they pick
it,
Paul.
It's like, it's Paul's story.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though the book is very much about the world.
Yes. Now, I'm not necessarily an advocate for narration starting a movie. It's hard to info dump a lot at the beginning. I think this is the best single use of narration in a film ever. And I think it's because it's in the pseudo poetic style. And I think it's because Cate Blanchett, who is delivering it, you get your Tenzin origin basically right off the bat. And then we are dumped into Hobbiton. And I want to talk about Hobbiton because I love me some Hobbits. And I want to talk about Concerning Hobbits, one of the greatest pieces of music ever written. So Howard Shore composed this song. And this is very personal to me as well, because I had played piano growing up. I was very privileged in that. And then I decided I wanted to become a flautist because I wanted to play Concerning Hobbits.
I have a remix of The Shire by The White Lion on YouTube, and I think it's pretty good. Let's listen to this.
Oh, boy.
It's pretty simple. Pretty simple. Just wait for it, everybody. Just wait for it. Hold on. It's going to get there. Yeah. Yeah. Concern them hobbits, yo. Wait. Gonna feel that. Yeah. Bombadil your Tom, yo.
Oh my God. This is like what the inside of my brain sounds like all the time.
I believe it.
Just screaming in a hobbit.
Yeah.
At all of us. Jason, I would love to ask you because...
Please.
At the beginning of Lord of the Rings, we meet quite a few hobbits and we learn a lot about hobbit culture. Of the main hobbits, which I would say is the Four and Bilbo.
Okay.
Who's your favorite?
Bilbo.
Why Bilbo?
Because Bilbo is mysterious. I like... My favorite thing about storytelling is finding out that people have these pasts or have done these things that you don't know about,
mm-hmm.
and that you would never predict about them. I mean, I think it's the reason why I like stories, and it's the reason why I actually enjoy interviewing people,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoy talking to people, because I always feel like they're going to tell you something you never expected.
Mm-hmm.
And Bilbo is that character in The Hobbit. The other hobbits are just too young. They haven't gone on their adventure yet. But those four little kids and the entire town have no clue what happened to The Hobbit.
No.
At all.
No.
And I also...
They just know that Bilbo came back with chests full of mm-hmm. treasure. That's... And look, Bilbo was already rich.
Look,
now he's like extra rich.
In my headcanon,
mm-hmm.
that's not the only adventure that Bilbo goes on.
Interesting.
I think Gandalf showed up two or three more times and Bilbo went with him and did other stuff. And I kind of like... I also, in my opinion, now I know like most fans would be like, tell me, write those books. And I'd be like, no. It's better that we have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like my favorite thing with Doctor Who is I love that in my head canon, in between every episode of Doctor Who, the Doctor goes and spends 100 years doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll never know their full adventures. Mm-hmm. But that's why it's Bilbo. How about you?
My favorite...
It's Frodo, right?
It's Frodo. Yeah, for sure. Frodo's always been my favorite character from The Lord of the Rings, because he is, and I think it's the same reason why I really like Luke Skywalker, he is your very prototypical hero's journey hero. And we watch him or read him losing his innocence in a very palpable way, and that's what makes him heroic. Like, it's funny because to me, what makes Bilbo the most heroic is that Bilbo becomes a surrogate father.
Yeah.
To Frodo. Bilbo's not married. Bilbo doesn't have a family. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just add this extra child to his lot in life.
Also, I just think it's... I think
Frodo's parents get murdered.
I think it's really good writing. Are they murdered?
They're killed, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think it's really interesting writing that... It just shows you also Bilbo's character that he decided that he's like, yo, I'm going to get the heck out of the Shire.
Yeah.
And I'm going to turn invisible in front of people and they're going to flip out.
So this is more...
That's his plan.
This is something that's more...
What a cool dude.
...adequately illustrated in the books. Yeah. But Bilbo... If Bilbo were a human person now, he'd be a prank bro on YouTube.
Yeah.
So Bilbo in the books, when he's leaving, like he leaves the ring to Frodo, he leaves basically all of his possessions to his friends and acquaintances. Mm-hmm. And he leaves them... snarky notes about why he's giving them these, like he leaves one of his
okay, oh hey, you need this lawnmower because you don't mow your lawn enough.
Yeah, or hey, you're fat, so here's a mirror, look at yourself is one of them.
What a guy. So, I like him already.
I think it's really interesting that you said Bilbo, because I know some people look at Bilbo as being kind of stuffy, but Ian Holm I think does a really great job at playing the duality without making him too much like Gollum later on. And I think watching the scene when Bilbo has to give up the ring and he's speaking with Gandalf and watching the two Ians, you can tell that they like each other in real life, and that really translates over to their relationship. And I think that warmth really, really informs how like Sam and Frodo's friendship is played out on screen.
That's what also makes me think that they've had more than one adventure. Also, by the way, action figure spotlight.
Okay.
Not quite an action figure, but Weta Workshop, actually owned by Weta, they do these things that are called, I'm trying to find the exact name of them, but they are sort of, they're called mini epics.
Yes, they are, yeah.
And they are sort of cartoony versions of, and they're plastic, of the Lord of the Rings figures.
The movie characters,
yes.
Yeah.
And Ashley, fun facts, listeners, I have actually bought for Ashley basically the entire fellowship.
The entire fellowship.
The entire fellowship. And actually, since we are talking about a lovely little hobbit, I was very curious to see if the mini epics Weta Workshop had made a Bilbo.
Oh, have they? Because usually we used to pick them up at conventions and we haven't done that.
Ashley, they have.
Oh, and it's Ian Holm.
And I want it.
Jason, I want it.
So go check it out. It's the Ian Holm. They're very like...
He's got the red waistcoat in the book. He looks amazing.
Well, you can also tell, I will say, listeners, when you see these figures, you can tell like which actors from the movies said yes to their likeness and which ones didn't.
Yeah, which may have been part of their original contract or may have been something specific for the...
Oh, sure. I don't know. But they've basically made a whole bunch... They basically made a bunch of different people.
There's also a Gandalf Grey and a Gandalf White.
There's also a really... They made an actual statue. There's a really good Bilbo at his desk writing Lord of the Rings.
I've seen that. It's amazing.
Yeah. But I want the little Bilbo with his book. That's the one. So there you go.
He's cute. I didn't think we were getting an action figure spotlight this episode.
We might get several in this one, actually.
All right. So the next thing I think...
We're still in The Hobbiton, Ashley. This movie is so long.
It is not long enough. Extended versions only. Actually, when I was prepping my notes for this, I was like, did this happen in the... I haven't watched the theatrical cut since like 2017 because I was on an airplane going to New Zealand.
All right.
And they only had the theatrical cuts. The next thing I want to talk about is the titular fellowship itself. Jason, can you name the 9 members of the fellowship?
Yeah.
Do it.
Okay, so it's Frodo, Sam, Mary, Pippin, Boromir, Aragorn, Gimli, Legolas, Gandalf.
Hey, good job. All right.
And then secret 10th member, Bill the Pony.
Oh, Bill. Bye-bye, Bill. That's so sad.
Yeah, he's the secret. He's the 10th member of the fellowship, in my opinion. Bill the Pony.
Bill the Pony. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Not Gollum?
No, Gollum is not part of the fellowship. Get out of here with your Gollum talk.
He's not, because the fellowship breaks up before he comes along.
Next year, when we do the Two Towers.
Yeah. And they all Gollum talk.
Listeners, if you want us to do the Two Towers, and we're very
amenable to
it. Hashtag GHL.
TTT.
No. Hashtag GHL Two Towers, yes.
GHL Two Towers, yes. So I remember watching this and I remember seeing Rivendell for the first time. And I thought it was so beautiful. And then I remember watching, because Lord of the Rings special features ruined me for special features on anything for all times because they basically just shot everything. There was so much behind the scenes footage and so much process work. Like Peter Jackson, in a lot of ways, kind of like invented and ruined modern fandom with this. But seeing how they did that shot, because it's really just the shot where Frodo comes out of the onto the balcony once he's kind of recovered from the attack.
Now, what exactly are you talking about? Are you talking about the technology he invented for the Force perspective or the technology he invented for the models of Rivendell and stuff
for,
like that?
Well, for, the, kind of for, two the, for the models is what I'm talking okay. about. So there's a shot where Frodo comes out onto the balcony and it's Elijah Wood on the balcony with like the doorway that he's walked through and yeah. everything behind that is green screen, but it's a or blue screen, but it's a model.
Yeah,
they shot a model.
Yep.
And then, of course, they enhanced it with CG, but they do such a good job with all of the Elven realms, honestly. But I think Rivendell, for me in particular,
looks
feels
gorgeous.
The most magical. And I think it's because it's got a lot of reds in it. It feels autumnal compared to Lothlorien, which we see later. Lothlorien feels very cold.
We should back up a little bit and talk about what you just talked about with Peter Jackson and they at the time would have been DVD extras features.
Yes.
So they did these giant extended editions of Lord of the Rings. Now, you have to realize that in early pre-2008, I think almost 2010 and before, DVDs were a hell of a thing.
Mm-hmm. And we got a DVD player because of the Lord of the Rings.
DVD extra features were also their own market. Companies would like spend money to beef out commentaries and all kinds of things. That's the only reason why. Now
everyone just puts that on YouTube.
Well, now they don't do it because DVDs don't sell.
Mm-hmm.
So studios don't see the need to spend extra. Because what they used to do and what we used to do, and we have an acquaintance that this used to be their full-time job.
Yep. You've also done DVD extra features for the Muppets.
I did DVD extra features for the Jason Segel Muppets. Mm-hmm. I filmed a couple things. I also did it for like a Queen Latifah movie and stuff like that.
The choir movie, right?
I can't remember what it was called. It was the choir, and then there was another movie I did as well. It was The Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas guy.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson. There was,
my brain was like Hunter
there was
Solomon.
Another movie starring Johnny Depp that was him as Hunter S. Thompson. And it was him in Cuba.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I did some DVD extra features for that, too.
Interesting.
So there was a budget. So studios would basically hire a second crew.
Yeah.
To do the act, to just film everything. That's how I got hired. And they don't do that anymore.
No.
Because yes, you're right. Like with streaming, there's no market for that because they used to do that because it would make the DVDs exclusives.
The closest thing we have to that now is like Disney doing their Mandalorian docuseries, which they'll put on Disney Plus.
Yes, which they do as extra content.
Yeah.
I will agree with you. There is an argument to be made that the Lord of the Rings extended editions are the best extra features of all time.
I will die and fight anyone on that hill.
By the way, I'm going to throw out, actually, I think there is a strong contender for number two in terms of a movie that has that is not Lord of the Rings, that has the best extra features of all time. Do you want to make a guess? It is a superhero movie.
I have no idea, Jason.
It's Superman Returns.
Well, I don't know anything about Superman.
So Superman Returns, even though that movie has been made by a problematic director and has a problematic actor, when they released that DVD, it had a 3-hour feature length documentary about the making of the film. It was astounding.
But also the documentaries have to be good because there are lots of DVD extras where they have those things and they're just promotional tools. And that's what I thought was so cool about Lord of the Rings was they actually show you like Arwen and Galadriel's costume, for example, had fiber optic cables woven into them so that they had that ethereal elven glow.
Yep.
And like that's a fascinating, it's not just like I'm the producer who didn't actually work on this movie and I'm going to tell you why it's awesome.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that you see a lot now.
Yes, you're right. They're glorified commercials.
Yeah.
Marvel tends to do a lot of that now.
WB does it too.
But no, the extra features that show you how they make the movie.
Yeah.
The Superman Returns did that. Lord of the Rings. I mean, I remember the one from the Lord of the Rings was they just took before they were even shot the movie and they took all the guys to the place where they were going to shoot the Shire and they said, just draw for a day. And so these dudes just sat on a sheep pasture and was like, oh, I'm sketching grass.
Yeah. I loved Arwen when I saw this because they make Arwen much more active. They give her some other character stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some Glorfindel stuff to do.
All right, Ashley, I want to ask you a question about this.
Sure.
Okay. So, the Nazgul, the Ringwraiths, I think they look cool as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But they are basically just dudes with cloaks with these giant gauntlets.
Yeah, and a piece of cardboard on top of their head.
And they're chasing, yeah, because they're made them taller or something like that. I've always heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, in Lord of the Rings fandom, that there is sort of a debate about like what they should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always heard that some fans, some book fans, don't like the way they look in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And am I correct that they base the look of the Nazgul on a famous painting? Am I right that there's like a famous painting they made and it's like it's of the Nazgul like leaning over the tree of the hobbits?
Oh, I thought you meant, I was like, the scream? Yes. Oh my God, what is it? I have that man's book in our living room right now.
But this was a painting that a fan did in like the 70s.
Yes. Yeah.
And Peter Jackson saw it and was like, oh, that's what they should look like.
Well, also, if you think about it, like, let's be honest, from a production standpoint, it's way easier to whack the same, the gentleman who plays the lead Nazgul is the same person who plays Lurtz, the lead Uruk-hai, who plays the pink orc in the final movie, who plays the mouth of Sauron. All of that. So it's way easier to whack a reliable stuntie in a cloak and do some heavy breathing and then, you know, CG out their face. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in the books, they're supposed to be decrepit kings. So these are the nine kings of men.
Yep.
Who, one of them is Aragorn. I mean, arguably they're all Aragorn's direct ancestor, but one of them is Aragorn's like direct ancestor.
Yeah. Hey, Grandpa.
Yeah, really. But yes, this is based on a very famous painting. I wish book is
fine.
In the living room.
It's fine. It's all good.
But yes, it is.
I was unprepared about that.
Not to evoke the other movie that must not be named, but people who think they're based on Dementors make me want to smash things.
Oh,
so angry. I think visually, in terms of a film, I think they're a really great cinematic offset to the elves because they are dark and there's a lack of detail, and the elves have a very high detail. I'd love to Shia Baggins. I'd love to just say one more thing about the elves, and then we can move on and talk like real deep fellowship stuff. What an inspired casting choice is Hugo Weaving as Elrond. Like, could we have had a better Elrond in this world? I don't think so.
I don't know. It's interesting because, again, when I saw him in this movie, my immediate thought was, oh, Agent Smith.
Mr. Baggins. Mr. Aragorn.
All hobbits are a virus.
Billy Boyd's like, we're not a virus.
Yeah, but what about second Matrix?
What's about four Matrixes? I don't think he knows about Matrixes, Pip.
I don't think he knows about Resurrections, Pip. he's really good.
He gives me angry dad vibes, which I love for Elrond.
So we should talk about, like, this whole movie seems to... The exact middle point of this movie seems to be this very famous scene from the book and the very famous scene from the movie. The Council of... Is it Rivendell?
Elrond.
Council of Elrond. And that's basically like where they bring all the people in. They basically create the fellowship and stuff like that. And I remember in these extra features, Peter Jackson talked about that the most difficult scene to write in all three movies was this scene. And I understand exactly why, because
it's talking.
It's an exposition dump times 25. They basically at that point in the movie, they've done a pretty good job, even with the opening, of just like giving you like a sentence here and a sentence there and whatnot, and not overloading you.
Yeah.
But Council of Elrond, I think it's about an hour into the movie.
Oh, easily, yeah.
And they are just like, at this point, you're either in or you're not. And if you're not, you're going to fall asleep during this scene. Although I will say that the acting, these actors do a hell of a job of trying to make this exposition work. I do think this scene is not boring, although I think
it's a very well-directed scene.
It's a very well-directed scene. I think it's a hair too long. But I also...
Where do you feel like it gets too long?
I don't know. It just feels
that's
long.
Fine. I didn't know if there was a moment where you were like, and I'm out.
No, my follow-up to that was going to be, is I don't know what you would cut.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would cut from that.
Because you get like a huge exposition dump about Gondor, and I remember watching this for the first time. Because it's interesting. When I watched this, I was an actual child when I saw this movie. the characters that I didn't like or I didn't respond to as a child are the characters that I thought are more complex and interesting as an adult. Like, I did not like Elrond when I was a child. I did not like Boromir until I was a child.
I love Boromir.
And Sean Bean's great.
Yep.
Sean Bean is amazing. Sean Bean is in the part.
Sean Bean couldn't have
asked for a better Boromir.
To me, there's no one else for that part. It's Sean Bean.
Yes. Okay, so I found it.
You found the painting that we're talking
about? I found the painting. It is by John Howe, John with an H, Howe, H-O-W-E. So there you go. And it was also aped in the animated Hobbit movie as well.
Yes.
So I will share. I found a really cool graphic that's all three shots compared.
Well, let me ask you this, Ashley.
Yes.
You know, this is the scene where we form the Fellowship of... You shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah, and Britt McKenzie's in the background.
He is. Fellowship of the Concords.
Fellowship of the Figwit.
Yes. So... I mean, how do you think about it? Like, you know, you talked about earlier, and I have we got to this point where you said you had some concerns about the writing in terms of the book, the adaptation.
Oh, yeah. So my issue, sort of. So my
is any of that happened to this yes, point?
My issue with the writing, and I understand why they did it, and I think they did interesting things, but I think it falls short in future movies, is the changes to Arwen specifically.
Oh, yeah. Well, she showed up at this point, yeah.
I like making Arwen more active. I like giving her some...
she has the horsey...
Glorfindel things to do.
The horsey river magic.
Yeah, that moment is great for a movie. Yep. Elf magic doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. Wizard magic works
they
like that.
They showed that in every trailer.
Well, also, here's the thing that we have to acknowledge about Lord of the Rings and this particular adaptation about Lord of the Rings. This is white, Eurocentric power structure storytelling. This is all based on the English tradition. And because it is Tolkien, the Saxon English tradition, Tolkien will pick words, English words.
Yeah.
So instead of saying strange, if you read Lord of the Rings, Tolkien says queer a lot. Because queer is a Germanic-based word. Strange is a French-based word from étrange, which means strange, and came over after the Norman invasion. So Tolkien loves Saxon Old English storytelling. So that's the culture that Lord of the Rings is based in. And because it was written in the first half of the 20th century, it's very patriarchal. Mm-hmm. So there's like one woman in this whole movie. Mm-hmm.
Two if you count Galadriel.
There's two if you count Galadriel, but there's one young woman. Arwen's not young. Arwen's like a couple thousand years old at this point, but she presents as a young woman, sure. Right? I think Kate Blanchett was like 32 or 34 when they shot it, so she wasn't old, but she is much more matriarchal. She's a queen. Arwen is she's the closest thing we have to an ingenue.
She is the ingenue of this movie, basically.
And I like giving her something to do, and they work really hard in future films to give her something to do.
Mm-hmm.
However,
less successful
in my opinion from a writing and an acting standpoint. Yep. But I do appreciate that's
the moment where she's the horse rears up and she's like, if you want him,
come and claim him.
I actually think that was the moment. There were two moments in the original trailer, and we'll get to the other one later.
Yeah.
That was one of the moments.
Oh, I know the one you're gonna talk
when
about.
I saw this trailer and I was like, I want to see this movie.
She does Liv Tyler does a really good job at elf voice, because Liv Tyler kind of has a really high voice.
Yeah, she's very up
and
here.
And she takes it down. She Aragorn. Becomes a little more of an alto, and she does a good job at seeming aloof, but not distant. And I think it's the same trick that it is to playing a Vulcan. I love the moment where Aragorn is looking for the king's foil, the herb, and she puts the sword to his throat, and she's like, a ranger caught off his guard. Like, that's mm-hmm. such a good moment, and it tells you so much about their dynamic. And like, she's playful with him in that, and you never get to see them be like light with each other again. Everything else from that point for them is very serious.
Dire circumstances.
And he's like, go, I'm going to die. And she's like, no, you know, but so it's the Arwen stuff. And I see what they're going for. And I appreciate that they were like, maybe we should have two other women in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's wholly successful. So that's the end of my thought. Should we move on from the Fellowship forming?
Well, we should talk about that, you know, my favorite, Bilbo is in Rivendell, which I always love.
Oh, yeah. That puppet is still scary. I do not like to watch it.
You need to define what that pipe puppet is.
So we do get Bilbo. He's much aged mm-hmm. at this point.
Because he doesn't have the ring.
They do a really good job with the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And so Frodo kind of goes to see him one last time, and he pulls out the ring and Bilbo becomes possessed by it again in a very visual. This is like the most Peter Jackson used to be a horror director moment in the Fellowship.
It's a scary moment. Bilbo turns into like a scary monster.
And it's a puppet.
Yeah.
It's a puppet that's enhanced with CGI, of course. But I remember being like startled by how scary it was the first time I saw it. And I'll still close my eyes when I watch it now. But I will say the effect, not all the effects in this movie hold up. This one does.
Well, can we, before we move on to the, because this is now the Fellowship are marching towards the mountain, Caradas or whatever it was.
Caradlas.
Caradlas, blah, blah, blah.
And then they're cresting the hill and that music plays. Yep.
Da, 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 da.
The hero theme.
Yeah,
the Fellowship theme.
But we've kind of skipped over somebody here because, you know, the hobbits are running around and they get picked up by Aragorn and they do all this stuff and they get the Rivendell. And they're doing that because Gandalf was like, I will meet you, Frodo, at the
I gotta go to Gondor for like the, 30
the inn of the
Prancing, of the Prancing Pony.
And Christopher Lee as
Saruman. Oh, I was like, are we gonna talk about Peter Jackson's cameo in Bree?
No, we should talk about Saruman. Kind
the
of
the only cast member who met J.R.R. Tolkien.
Really?
James Bond himself, yeah.
Wow.
He read the books every year until he passed away.
I could be wrong on this. I had always heard that Christopher Lee sought this out.
So
that he asked to be in this movie.
If you will hold, please, let me scroll down to my fun facts about Christopher Lee.
Okay, please. Because I know he was a fan of the books.
Okay, so this is via, I got this information via Mental Floss, but I knew this for a while.
Am I right? Did he request to be in this movie?
So he did seek out this production. He sought out a meeting with Peter Jackson about appearing in it, but do you know who he wanted to play?
Oh, Sauron.
No.
Elrond.
No. He would have been an interesting
Elrond. Who?
Gandalf.
Oh, you know
but
what?
Peter Jackson was like, you gotta be Saruman. You gotta be Saruman.
Interesting.
And
I think he's a hair too old for Gandalf.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
He would have been a good Gandalf, though.
And he insisted that he be able to audition for Gandalf. And okay. So Peter Jackson was like,
I'm not going to say no to Christopher Lee.
I guess. And then apparently they did a couple takes and then Christopher Lee, I guess, realized that he wasn't right for Gandalf and just left.
Oh,
and so then they offered him Saruman.
And it probably made his day.
And he took it and he is.
Thank you, Peter.
He's amazing. He's frightening in it. I mean, I know you think that their fight is silly.
It is silly.
In his tower, but I think for two older gentlemen, I think they do a really great job. I appreciate them inserting action into that conflict because that conflict is all mental.
Their wizard fight in this movie is kind of goofy, but I will tell you this, at no point does Saruman not feel threatening. He is scary.
Yes.
He is very...
Yep.
He
they whack some nails on him and he's really scary.
And it's all with his voice. And I will say that this is the movie that gave Christopher Lee a late career renaissance because he only appears in Star Wars because of this movie.
Yeah. This is why I know who he is. Yeah. I hadn't seen any of his earlier work.
Oh man. I knew, like, I was like, oh my God, here he is.
Now I know he's actually James Bond. Check out our James Bond episodes for that story.
Yeah. He's Scaramanga.
Yeah.
But he actually, he spends the next 10 years basically being in a lot of movies.
Doing a version of this.
Because of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a good sport about wearing all that big wig.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There we go. Okay. Now let's talk about the two best shots from the trailer.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. Where they crest the mountain and they showed like, they were like Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, The Return of the King. You're like, we got 3 years of these movies. Oh boy.
Yeah. And then when they're further up on the mountain, it's the shot of Boromir picking up the ring.
Yes.
And his possession starting.
So that was the second shot that I talked about when I saw the trailer where they drop the ring in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a camera trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a giant ring, apparently. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to see the camera's like positioned looking through the ring at Aragorn and Frodo.
Yeah.
And the only way they could do it is they basically had to build a camera sized ring for the camera to be able to fit through it.
They had, and they've said this very publicly, but they had a rings in a few different sizes, and also size for different people's hands as well. They had hobbit size rings.
Yep.
They had wizard size rings.
Yeah, because the ring is constantly like moving and shaking.
Yes,
yeah.
It can do that. It fits itself to its bearer.
But yes, them actually on top of this glacier or mountain or
it's a mountain, which Sean Bean walked up every day because he was afraid of the helicopters.
Yeah, everybody took a helicopter. Yeah, and he walked up or he took a car.
They did have
like
to be evacuated one day.
But this is where the movie, like, really, to me, starts finally showing off the New Zealand landscape, which really...
I'd never seen New Zealand in a film before, and now it's in everything.
Now it's in everything, and it's gorgeous, and it's beautiful, and you understand, you think to yourself, oh, this is the reason why Peter Jackson was, we need to shoot it here. Because look at this place.
He didn't want to move.
Well,
he didn't want to leave his home.
I also think, look.
No, you're correct.
Well, and I also think Peter Jackson, being the genius that he was,
yeah,
also smartly wanted to, look, there was a film industry in New Zealand before this movie.
Of course there was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the modern 2021, 2022 film industry of New Zealand only exists because of Lord of the Rings. Because Peter Jackson built an infrastructure.
Yes. And a studio.
That is still there. And that's the reason why now, like, Shang-Chi shot in New Zealand, for God's sakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's called Stone Street Studios.
Uh-huh.
And I have been there very graciously on a Peter Jackson joint where I got to meet Hugo Weaving. Name drops. And they told us that when they shot The Lord of the Rings there, it was not soundproof. And you can hear airplanes constantly. And I remember standing in that studio being like, what a nightmare. And they also, you know, would have shot a lot of stuff in the parking lots, and they shot a lot in and around Wellington as well. But yes, this shot really, these two shots really show off how beautiful and how diverse New Zealand is in terms of the ecosystems that exist there.
I agree.
This is also the start of Boromir's downfall. And if you are into acting and you are into performances, Sean Bean just ups the stakes a little bit in every scene, and you watch him. Even he has a really great hero moment when they go down into Moria, where he's, you know, he grabs Merry and Pippin and jumps off the bridge in Jason's favorite sequence at the falling stairs. And even when he's doing good things, you can see that he's doing bad things, and you can see that he's doing good things for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. Whereas Viggo Mortensen's Aragorn is really taking the baby steps to transition from Strider to the King of Gondor at the same time. Like they're opposite narratives. They're opposite sides of the same coin.
It's actions for gain versus actions of pure intent.
Yeah.
Aragorn is acting of pure intent, so that's why he wants to save Frodo. Boromir is saving those two to prove that he's like, hey, I'm still a good guy.
That his dad still loves him.
Yeah.
It's also fascinating because Aragorn proves the narrative of the person who doesn't want to be in charge should, which is a narrative that Sean Bean will then go on to play in Game of Thrones in his turn as Ned Stark.
Exactly.
I remember seeing the Game of Thrones poster and being like, wow, they just cast Boromir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he looks like older Boromir.
Oh, and that's another thing, is that that's the ripples of this movie through pop culture, is that that is 100% the reason why they cast them in Game of Thrones.
It's the reason why they made Game of Thrones.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was because of this movie.
Yes. Is there anything you'd like to talk about? Because before we talk about Moria, because I think that's the next place we should probably
Let's talk about Moria.
So
in my head, they just go to Moria really quickly.
They don't. They duck from the crows. They climb the mountain. Saruman sends the snowstorm.
So much walking.
They fight that kraken, which is the silliest thing in my... That's the thing I don't like about the
Belloc
movie.
Yeah, they save the word for friend and enter. Yeah.
Melon.
Yeah. Melon.
M-E. But my question is, why it elvish? Why it not dwarvish? This is a dwarf stronghold.
And
my question.
I will tell you that...
That was a good level in the video game.
I will tell you, when I played the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers video game, because there was not a Fellowship Ring, because they thought it wouldn't work. A lot of people thought this movie was going to bomb.
I can see how at every point of making this, you're like, what are we doing?
Yes, exactly. We're spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
And when they did the Two Towers video game, they basically gave you all the levels from the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah.
And yes, when you got to the Mines of Moria, you had to fight this squid monster thing that's in the water that attacks them.
Yeah.
It was hard.
It was hard.
Yep.
That's
a great video game, by the way.
It is.
Yep.
It's silly in the movie. But once they get into Moria, I think they do a really good job. This is, again, where you can kind of see where Peter Jackson's a horror director. The interplay of light and dark, I think, is really good here. The lighting in Balin's tomb, Balin, who will go on to appear in the Hobbit trilogy as well.
This is also the point for me where when you get into Moria and they do those giant shots and you just see pillar after pillar after pillar after pillar.
And
the Howard Shore score goes, rises. This is the point to me where I felt, and it's funny because the very next year I will have this feeling. So when I saw Spider-Man 1 in 2002, I remember going into that movie thinking to myself, this is a very difficult movie to pull off because live action swinging a Spider-Man is going to be so difficult. And if they can pull that off, I think they might have something.
And they did.
And they did. And I remember being like, holy cow, you can do any superhero movie now. When I saw this scene, I thought to myself, oh, wow, the technology has caught up that we can create any fantasy environment. These these ginormous castles, these insane dragons, these other things. I was like, this is a game changer.
Yeah.
That we can now create these worlds that could only exist in novels
or
comic books.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen that. And I think that's why we are where we are right now.
Look at Game of Thrones. Look at
Dune.
Look at The Expanse.
Look at Star Trek updates. Like, look at New Trek, the way it looks. Look at
the Star Wars sequels, how they push. Yeah. Like, we've all these movies, I think.
There's a direct line.
All these movies in the early 2000s, like, laid the foundation, or like, I think showed audiences that you were like, oh my God, we can do anything on screen now.
Yeah.
We really can.
Yes. And, but I think Peter Jackson also proves that all you have to do is have artists and artisans and craftsmen willing to do the work.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, unfortunately, The Hobbit doesn't stand as strong. Because they're relying too much on
CGI, just
on
to do
CG
everything.
Instead. There's not enough practical. This movie is such a mix between the two.
We always talk about, is scarcity is the mother of invention?
Yeah, necessity.
Necessity is the mother of invention. And so he only had $300 million to make three movies.
Yeah.
For The Hobbit, he had $300 million for every movie.
Yeah.
And
but it's also a Warner Brothers joint versus a New Line Cinema joint.
Yes, and that becomes a thing, right, where it was the idea of, you know, any problems he had, he could just throw money at it.
Yes.
Whereas on this, I guarantee you, because again, New Line Cinema was an indie house.
Yeah, this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yep,
20 years later, these are the people that made Blade.
Yeah.
They are penny pinchers. Also, by the way, I know the story that when he pitched this around town, he actually only pitched this two movies because he thought he'd never get three movies greenlit. And it was New Line's idea to make it three movies.
It's smart. Two would have been hard.
Part of the reason why he got it greenlit was because
he agreed to the budget for two movies.
He agreed to the budget of two movies.
Look,
three.
I'll say this. I know that affected the casting, but like, okay, I'm going to go on a weird tangent here. One of the most interesting things for me about this movie at this time was who everybody had a crush on. Which actor everybody liked.
Okay.
Because everyone had a different opinion, but everyone I knew thought Aragorn was hot. Everyone thought Viggo Mortensen was hot.
Viggo Mortensen's a good-looking man.
I also think it's because Viggo Mortensen kind of is Aragorn in his everyday life.
Sort of,
He's this great leader.
Are you saying he's the secret king of the world?
I mean, I'd let him be the king of the world.
I don't know if I'd let Viggo Mortensen be king of the world.
But, you know, everyone speaks of him very highly. He seems like he's a great leader on set. He's friendly. He's very affable. He knows a lot of languages. Sure. He's a great athlete.
Sure.
You know, like, he kind of embodies all of these qualities that you sort of think of Aragorn as having. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of that is an accident. And as we're going to talk about in the extra, some of the big stars who were at least approached, never really attached to this movie, I think would have been garbage choices compared to the actors that we got.
Well, because you have to think about it from a movie studio perspective, right?
Yes. Where I understand.
If they're spending $300 million on a movie that would have been using a lot of unproven special effects technology.
And unproven. Yeah. Why are you going to risk your stars on it?
Similar to The Matrix. And also similar to the Star Wars prequels, although the Star Wars prequels were completely self-funded by George Lucas.
Yes.
But all of these movies, even Spider-Man, all doing special effects things never been done before.
Yeah.
So we're on this almost CGI renaissance. Mm-hmm. And all these movies make that happen. So this studio, New Line Cinema, New Line Studios is very much like, well, the only way we might get a return is if we put like a Will Smith or somebody that in there of the 2000 time. Okay, so let's talk about Moria.
There's two fights in Moria.
Yep, the cave. They brought a cave troll.
One of them has okay CG monster. One of them has excellent to this day CG monster.
So do you think the goblins and stuff are the not so good?
No, I think the cave troll. No, the goblins are dudes. which is why I think the goblins look great and creepy. And
they don't look
eerie.
Good in the wide shots.
They don't, but like there's a scene where when they've left Balin's tomb.
Yeah.
And they are all, it's right before the Balrog appears.
And they're being chased.
And they're being surrounded and they look at this one extra and he just like grins and tilts his head to the side. It's such a good specific moment.
See, because there's a shot there to me where...
When they're climbing down the pillars is when they look silly.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah.
It's
because we don't think of bipedal humanoids as moving that way. Yeah. That's why.
You think the cave troll doesn't look good?
I don't think the cave troll looks as good now as it did in 2001.
See, I think it mostly holds up.
I don't think it looks as good now. Is it? Well, it's not the cave troll that looks bad.
Yeah.
It's when they're interacting with the cave troll. Like when Legolas is jumping on and off of it, you're
it's
like,
CGI,
that looked like a video game.
Because I think the first shot where it kicks open the door.
They have a cave troll.
And then it thumps down its club.
Yes.
They do this. So there's a subtle move here.
And Sam runs under his legs.
Well, yeah. Or somebody does. Or Gimli. I think Gimli slides through or something like that. But what happens is when the cave troll thuds, this is where I think it's brilliant. They do a CGI camera shake.
Yes, they might have actually shaken the camera.
It
might have been a Star Trek shake.
Whatever it does, the camera bumps and it sells the reality of that CGI. And it's fully CGI. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That first shot, I think, still to this day, holds up.
So when I first saw this movie, I thought, and they stabbed Frodo, I thought Frodo was dead.
Frodo!
I
did too. I thought Frodo was dead too.
Because I also didn't know enough about movies to be like, oh, Spider-Man blipped away. He'll be back. He's Spider-Man.
I'll be honest with you. When I went into this movie and we made the Fellowship, I thought, I honestly was like, by the time we get to the third movie, half of them are going to be dead.
I didn't, because I was young enough to be like, all the good guys live. I was shocked when Boromir died. I was like truly shocked.
I was actually stunned that Boromir is the only one that does die. It's a hard journey.
Okay, so we got to talk about the Balrog.
So I actually thought, I actually at the same, I thought Frodo was dead too.
I was devastated because I loved
him. Devastated?
Because I loved him so much.
Is that a real thing now? Devastated?
It's like a stupid slang thing, yeah.
Oh, okay. Devastated.
Devastated, yeah.
All right. All right, let's talk about the Balrog.
Fire and shadow. The design is so cool.
In the darkness that are more to fear than the orcs. Or some whatever Gandalf says.
Yeah. There's also a lot of great emotional stuff that goes on in Moria. But tell me about your thoughts on the Balrog.
So this is another thing that I've heard. And listeners, we're going to get an extra long episode. This is Lord of the Rings. We're not going short.
Sorry.
Or you're welcome.
What can I say except copyright?
I know there's a debate among Lord of the Rings novel fans about the look of the Balrog. Because this is a very kind of classic demon-y look of the Balrog. He has twisty ram horns, giant bat wings, and a mother flippin' whip and a flaming sword. I think this Balrog, I'm going to state this right now. I'm not going to make this list. I think this Balrog is in the top five of movie monsters. It is so flipping cool looking. He is so cool looking, Ashley. He looks amazing. And he still looks amazing. The flames look great. And then just the sound effect that like his voice is sort of this like this weird bass.
Yeah.
It's like this weird like and it like you hear him coming.
Okay, so can I go on like a tangent?
Please.
So the Balrog is a Maia. Do you know what Maia or Maiar are? So in Lord of the Rings, Arda, the planet, has Ainur, which are like the god creators, and then it has Maia, which are sort of the angelic or demonic creatures. They're servants of the god creatures. Like, for example, the Astari, the wizards, are Maia. Mm-hmm. So they're these sort of angelic beings. So the Balrog is a dark Maia.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a dark god's servant, dark demon. And he's considered to be an avatar of darkness, but the name Balrog in Sindarin, which is one of the elf languages, means demon of might. So he is like this very powerful, dark creature.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about movie Balrog?
I think for a movie adaptation, great choice.
Okay.
He doesn't look the way he's described, but I don't care.
Yeah.
Also, that's my bias because I'm not as interested in villains and monsters.
Yeah.
So I'm like mildly less invested in how he looks than how other characters look.
This is the coolest part of this entire movie.
You Shall Not Pass is so iconic.
It's memeable.
Ian McKellen is still eating out.
Fly, you fools.
Yeah, so great.
Yep, you shall not pass.
I was surprised that he died too because I knew Gandalf from The Hobbit.
Mm.
So
I thought he was dead too.
I thought he was like dead. And then I read the three books in between the first movie and the second movie.
Now, here is the big debate, listeners, that Ashley and I have off mic all the time. We literally had this conversation
like less than a week ago.
A couple of days ago. There's one problem in my head, one giant problem with this movie. And now I know that this problem lies at the hat of J.R.R. Tolkien more than it does Peter Jackson. When Gandalf dies, it's the climax of the movie.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
And the movie goes on for 40 more minutes.
The movie and the book are called The Fellowship of the Ring.
I get that.
So you have to go until the fellowship breaks.
But
in terms of cinematic five-act structures, this is
the climax of the movie, and nothing past it. And I'll tell you this. I enjoy
a lot of what comes after.
Yeah, yes. I enjoy the Boromir's death that's coming. I enjoy...
Oh, it's one of my favorite moments in cinematic history.
I enjoy Aragorn and Frodo talking and Sam wandering out. There's a lot of stuff that I enjoy. I enjoy seeing Galadriel, but none of it reaches the height of Gandalf's death.
But let me ask you then, would you have started Two Towers with, which Two Towers, by the way, doesn't end where the book ends, because the book ends with Shelob.
It ends like way early.
Would you have started Two Towers with them walking aloft Lorien?
You know,
and look, this is me asking you to remake a movie.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's a big, but like, then there's so much, like, you have to do Lothlorien because you at least need to get Frodo the Light. If nothing else, Frodo needs the Light of Elendil, our most beloved star. You need to kill Boromir and then separate the fellowship. Like, that's, another 45 minutes. So that's tacking 45 minutes onto Two Towers, which means you're either adding 45 minutes to Two Towers or you're cutting 45 minutes from Two Towers.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, because which is mostly Rohan stuff.
The only movie of these three.
Yeah.
And this is, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
I know.
The only movie of the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy that has a working climax is Two Towers. Because Helm's Deep is the climax of the movie.
Yeah.
And the movie ends like 15 minutes after that happens.
Yeah.
Return of the King has the exact same problem.
Mm-hmm.
They climb up the mountain, they do the thing, and the movie goes on for 45 more minutes.
But they do the thing because this is a fable, right? I'll also die on this hill because I like the stuff that comes after.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving you, and they all lived happily ever after.
Yes, I understand.
But yes.
I'm willing to give it a more pass for the finale.
Because it's the finale.
This was, my only comparison with this is that this is like the Death Star blowing up and the first Star Wars, and then we just see them like going to another planet and like talking to somebody else and chasing after Jabba, and then they have like one more fight with Darth Vader and then they get their medals.
Would you have cut Lothlorien?
I honestly think I would have.
How dare you can tell.
I think I would have taken them right to the river.
When you watch.
Or I would have cut something earlier to get there faster.
When you watch these movies, I think you can really tell that they love the elves and they are looking to include the elves. And it's tough because the narrative is that they are leaving.
Mm-hmm.
To
be honest with you, like thinking about it objectively.
Yeah.
I do like the character of Galadriel.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about it objectively, I think we could have come up with another scene where maybe Galadriel stops them in the woods and gives them the gifts that they need.
Mm.
And then that's all you get, and gives them the cloaks. And it's like, I know, I have powers and blah, blah, blah.
Well, she's really the only other ring bearer that we deal with what it means to be a ring bearer. Because Gandalf, Saruman, and Elrond are all ring bearers, but we don't really deal with
Yeah.
They're like Galadriel's the only one who kind of commiserates with Frodo about like the power dynamic of being a ring bearer.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I kind of think you maybe could have gotten a little bit of that. And this is me rewriting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and these movies are great. I'm not saying, you know,
yeah,
I'm
just we're just having the discussion. That's all.
I think you could have got that information or maybe put that information in the beginning of Two Towers.
Interesting.
And, you know, because we see the scene in Two Towers where Galadriel is like sort of having telepathic mind conversations with Elrond.
Yeah, that's a little, that's a stretch on elf powers.
But they're literally having telepathic mind phones.
Yeah.
But
well, they're ring bearers. So.
When you think about when I look at the feel of that movie.
Yeah.
Like it peaks when Gandalf dies and they're all crying and bawling. And I think like, man, if you would have taken that straight to the river and then Boromir dies. Oh, my God. Like 1-2 punch, because I'll tell you this. What's the Lothlorien? That's where they go to woods.
Yeah.
Lothlorien dead stops the movie.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Because I'm getting a little mixed up in my mind.
It's all good.
The Aragorn and Boromir conversation where Boromir is like, I see the White Tower and we'll be there as brothers.
Happens
that's
in Lothlorien.
Extended, right? That's not theatrical.
Yes.
And the White City will call us home.
That is in the extended edition.
See, I think that should have been in the movie. Yeah. Anyway. Can we move on and talk about Lothlorien a little bit?
So there's my hill to die on, my soapbox.
There's your thing. Is there anything you like about Lothlorien? Because I find Galadriel a compelling character, but I don't find her likable. I don't want to hang out with her.
I think the look of Lothlorien is cool.
It's very cold.
But
to me, Lothlorien. I'm sorry, I just asked you a question and now I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
To me, Lothlorien is the folly of elves. Mm. Lothlorien represents what the elves do wrong.
Oh,
because it is cold and distant and traditional versus Rivendell is known as the great elven refuge because they welcome everyone, which is why I think it's in warm, bright colors. Mm. And it's why I think Lothlorien is in like these blues. So I'm sorry.
And it's more of a city instead of a bunch of trees.
Instead of a kingdom, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And you can see it. It's not hidden.
Yes.
Not really.
Yeah.
Because I will tell you, I think all the information that mm-hmm. you get from Lothlorien, we could get in other ways that mm-hmm. would be more interesting.
It's interesting because the things that I really like about Lothlorien
yeah.
and the scenes there
yeah.
are Boromir and Aragorn bonding time, Gondor bros.
Yep.
And Sam,
which I think you could have got just in a walking scene,
and Sam eulogizing Gandalf because we don't get the song yeah. or the eulogy.
Yeah,
the only thing you get is they're singing, and someone asked Legolas, like, tell us what they're saying, and he's like, I would tell you, but I'd be moved to tears,
mm-hmm.
but it would break my heart to tell you. And I'm like, just tell us what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Most people don't speak Elvish.
Yeah.
Okay, so after that, we're at the end of the movie.
They do some boating.
They do.
And they go between the DVD bookends that they had in every book set. The DVD bookends of the two kings with their hands out.
Yes, the two kings of Gondor. I'm on a different page than I thought I was. That's fine. So we get the betrayal of Boromir here in these final scenes.
Yes.
And
I would have gone with you to the end, my brother, my captain, my king.
I would have followed you to the end. Actually, and then Aragorn says to Frodo, I would have gone with you to the end. The
did I get those mixed up?
Mordor. It's, yeah.
To the very fires of Mordor. That is where you hear Viggo Mortensen's dialect.
His Danish slips in here every once in a while when he yells.
Aragorn has some weird line readings, and it's simply because you can hear his dialect coming in.
Yeah, and, you know, that's...
And also, let's talk about this.
Okay.
Because this is the first movie, and this will be the only movie you can really talk about this. There are some very weird... and also interesting dialect choices in this movie
mm-hmm.
because we have hobbits that are RP.
Oh, I have extensive thoughts about the hobbits dialect and why they sound the way they do.
Please go ahead.
Okay. So, and I know this for a fact, they did dialect training
uh-huh.
before they went. So Frodo, Merry and Pippin are all upper class, good family, rich hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
They were all supposed to do RP.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Elijah Wood's doing RP, Dominic's doing basically RP.
And Billy Boyd just doing his own voice.
So, so when they did their dialect coaching, yes. he was doing RP.
Uh-huh.
And then they were like, you're funnier, because Pippin is the closest thing to comic relief we have.
Yeah.
They were like, you're funnier if you're Scottish. And the Tooks invented golf. That is canon.
It's Scottish.
And the Scots in real life invented golf. So they were like, you can be Scottish. The Tooks are Scottish.
Well, what dialect is Sean Astin doing? Because a lot of times he just sounds American.
So I'm not quite sure which specific, but he's obviously doing like a quote unquote working. Jordan Dunn is screaming into her phone right now.
Listener and fellow podcaster, yes. Jordan Dunn.
All of our English listeners. I just can't remember. I apologize. But he's doing a quote unquote working class because he's a gardener.
See, a lot of times it sounds like he has absolutely no dialect.
I disagree.
I think he's doing an affectation to his voice.
They are all, but
it doesn't sound like a dialect.
But the two Americans are doing what they do in film a lot. They're doing light versions. They're not like when a lot of people do Scottish, they do a lighter version of it.
Fair.
Because the Scottish dialect is so thick.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that with the Hobbits, I'm sure with everyone, but I know a lot more about the Hobbit dialects.
Yeah.
They picked them specifically because of the class of Hobbits that they are.
And then I also say, well, Viggo at certain points sounds like he's doing RP. And then at other points, it just sounds like he's trying to do like a standard American.
Yeah. Well, he is American.
Yes. No, but like it varies. It really varies a lot. And then again, it's interesting because like, yeah, you'll meet other cultures in this movie. And some of them sound very Kiwi. And some of them don't.
Who do you think sounds Kiwi?
Well, he's in the next movie, but Carl Urban sounds very Kiwi when he shows up, I feel.
Oh, I don't think so. I think he does a really good job.
What does a man, a dwarf, and a...
You know, you sound like Jimmy Stewart.
That's what he sounds like in that movie.
I mean, he's definitely doing...
I love Carl Urban.
He's definitely doing an affectation, but I don't think he sounds Kiwi. Anyway, that's a discussion for next year.
That's a discussion for hashtag GHL Two Towers. Yes. Is anybody still listening to this episode?
I don't know. If you're still listening, hashtag please talk about when Boromir dies. Can we talk about Boromir's fall? It's like the last best bit of acting in this movie.
We gotta. Yeah, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about it.
Give
me all your feelings and thoughts right now. Go.
Cry it
on
destroys
podcast.
Me every single time.
I don't see any tears, so I don't know if this is true.
I do cry when Aragorn and Boromir like have that last moment. I think it is so beautiful. I think the makeup on Sean Bean looks incredible. And it is a scene where Mun Man is leaning, like nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
They don't move that much.
Because Boromir gets shot with three arrows in a pretty heroic death.
Yeah, it's an awesome death. And
or is it? It's three.
It's three crossbow bolts. And him dying for the two most innocent hobbits for his sins to the like leader hobbit, I think is really a really beautiful bit of storytelling.
Yes.
And then the honor that Aragorn gives him in death, where he like places a sword over his heart and then he takes the gauntlets. That's when you see Aragorn's like, gonna be king for the first time. Like the whole thing is so amazing and incredible, and I've seen it 150 times and it still makes me emotional, and I don't think it would be as good if these two dudes weren't outstanding actors.
I will tell you this, listeners, because in our podcasting career and our writing career, we've gotten asked all the time about, for writing advice, about character arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I believe heartily in, a character arc. And I will tell you, Ashley's dropping a power cord.
I'm trying to plug the computer in.
Just grab it. It's fine. I think if you want a great example of what I think is a subtle yet compelling and totally earned character arc, it's Sean Bean's Boromir in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you first meet him, he is a dick.
Yeah.
And he's arrogant.
Yeah.
And he's an ass.
Yeah.
And over the court, and you know, they always say that, like, you know, you always got to get to the point where all hope is lost. Well, he tries to betray Frodo.
Yeah.
All hope is lost. And then he gets his rising action and goes right to his climax, which is his death.
I do wish we got a little bit more of like good Boromir.
No, but that's why you love him, is because you don't.
But we get him in the
subsequent
movies. You
don't want good Boromir. If you got more good Boromir, you would not love this moment.
I just love him in Gondor and him with Faramir.
That's how story works.
Brothers,
No. That's how story works. More of that stuff.
You should have seen the Osgiliath. No. That's all I'm saying.
No, that is a bad. That is a. I'm nixing that all, listeners. That is a bad fan reaction. Though it works because of what we got, and more would ruin it.
Oh, you're probably right.
You know,
you're probably right.
But I understand. You should. You
should want more.
You should want more.
Yeah.
Leave them wanting more, as they would say.
Is there anything else that you would like to bring up? Is there anything that we forgot to talk about? We have said nothing about Legolas and Gimli.
John Rhys-Davies is awesome.
John Rhys-Davies takes a character who's literally just there for punchlines and actually makes him a real person.
He's really good. We should talk about another thing in this movie is, I think the costumes are amazing.
Yeah.
I think the cinematography is amazing. I actually think the editing is pretty good. And fun fact, Ashley, would you look up who the editor of this movie is?
I can because tell you, right?
I want to...
Edited by John Gilbert.
Okay, so I knew this from the extra features.
He's in New Zealand. He's a Kiwi.
Well, John Gilbert, you did a fantastic job. Because I think the editing in this movie is smooth as butter. And...
He edited Hacksaw Ridge.
Which is a movie I love.
Yeah.
Which is great. Peter Jackson intentionally chose different editors for all three of these movies mm-hmm. to give them different feels, which I think is a genius director decision. And I think you can feel that these are edited by different people. Now, another thing I want to talk about is I want to go back to Howard Shore.
Yes.
Because I absolutely love the music that he plays when Sam goes out to join Frodo and almost drowns.
And John Aston punctures his foot open on the riverbed.
And it leads us into the ending. I think that piece of music is pretty good. You know, that's the thing where I love the actual end scene of this movie. I don't like that I have to wait 40 minutes from Gandalf to get there.
I like it that when he pulls Sam into the boat, then Sam's got wet hair and nothing else is wet.
And he's like he's just damp. He's just damp. Yeah.
No, he's not. You can see the fuzzies on his cloak because they weren't gonna, you know.
And we're gonna dunk him.
You weren't gonna give him hypothermia.
They should have just told him to dunk. They should have just like dumped a bucket of water.
I know.
Him
and it makes me laugh every time.
movie magic. You know. I don't know. There's nothing specific. So I guess, okay. Should we get to our overall questions here?
Yes.
Okay.
So we do this every time we do a film. I'm going to ask Jason, who is the best actor? What is the best scene? What do you think the legacy of the movie is? And we're going to rate this on a scale of 1 to 5 Bregos. So Jason, this is tough. Who is the best actor? Because The Lord of the Rings is very much an ensemble show.
Yeah.
An ensemble cast. So who's the best actor? And you've got some real luminary talents here as well.
This is rough.
Yeah, I know who I'm going to give it to if you'd like me to go first.
Please, please.
I'm going to give it to Sean Bean.
Okay.
Because we don't get a significant amount more of Sean Bean. Boromir is a literary great, and he's a very complex character. And just like his turn in the James Bond franchise.
Mm-hmm. And Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but that's after this.
Oh, fair.
Sean Bean proves that he's always up to the task, and he looks amazing as Boromir. He looks great in that costume.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that character being any good without him. So I'm going to give it to Sean Bean.
I'm going to give it to Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
As Gandalf, yeah. Because, again, this movie was a risk. And this movie was a risk to get audiences. We're still talking about this movie 20 years later. And I'm going to put that on his shoulders, that when he rides in on that wagon in Hobbiton,
mm-hmm.
you buy him as Gandalf right out the gate.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of carries us through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely Boromir's movie after he dies.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to give it to Ian McKellen. I think Ian McKellen's groundedness carries us through this movie like he carried those sweet little baby hobbits.
They took the little ones. What is your favorite scene?
You're going to have to go first on all of these, Ashley. I apologize. These are like Sophie's Choice questions.
It's for me, it's a tie between Arwen and Aragorn's goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a good scene.
Which I think is iconic. Yeah. Almost all in Elvish. I would rather spend one lifetime with you than all the ages of this world alone is a great quote.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend Lisa, the Viet Vegan, painted it for me. Because she knows how much I love it. I think that scene is really, really good. It's probably a tie between that and Boromir's death. I just think Boromir's death is really solid. And it's like, it's Gondor all the time, which is, it's just my jam. Sad Gondor bros is my jam.
We might have to do a 3-hour pod on Return of the King then. Damn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the one that really makes me cry.
Well, I'll tell you what, listeners, if you like this podcast, then maybe we'll do a part 1, part 2 when we get further down the line.
That'd be such a treat.
And I'll tell you what, maybe we'll even release both of them in the same week.
Yeah.
You know, we'll like double it up or something like
maybe
that.
Maybe one with a guest, one without a guest.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Something like
we'll
that. See. We tried to get a guest for this one, just didn't work out. Anyways, my scene is a scene where you can see a highway in the background. but I love it. And it's very simple. It's the scene where Sam takes the step in the wheat field and says, "If I take one more step, this is the furthest I've ever been from home."
This
is so small, but that every time, and it's in the first hour of the movie.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And there are stronger scenes. Like, Boromir's death is fantastic.
Yeah, but it's what your favorite scene is.
It's just such a small, beautiful moment.
That's also the beginning of, people really like to dunk on Sam.
Sam is one of the best characters.
And people like to dunk on Frodo and Sam.
No.
And that's the beginning of it. And I think people who dunk on that scene don't understand.
I'm going to say,
or they're not interested in understanding why that is significant.
I'm going to say this, Ashley. Mm-hmm. To me, there is only one member of the Fellowship you can dunk on.
Legolas.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. It's because Legolas is just like...
he's the sniper.
He's ambivalent most of the movies.
Well, that's the thing with the way the elves interact with this story, right?
Yeah.
Is they're sort of, their job is to look beautiful and deliver lines into the middle distance.
But
Orlando Bloom is great at that.
But if you've seen the third movie, I don't know how you can say that Sam is a terrible character.
I know, but people love to dunk on Frodo and Sam.
Frodo, Elijah Wood is like giving it his all. If he's for 19, he is stellar in this movie.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And he makes a lot of really strong choices. You might not agree with all them, but he really goes for it. I love him as Frodo. Okay, what's your rating? 1 to 5 Bregos.
A scale of 1 to 5 Bregos. It's going to be hard because my gut tells me give this a 5.
Then go with your gut.
But I know, I think there are better movies coming down the series.
Well, you're not wrong, but then I'll give this.
You know, okay,
I'll give this every Brego.
Okay, here you go. I'm going to give this, because I do have problems with the climax,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give this a 4.
Okay.
This is a very, very solid movie.
This movie was nominated for 13 Academy Awards.
But if I'm going to be honest, I think this is my least favorite of the three.
Interesting. I would say so too, but still, any day of the week, if you call me and you're like, Ashley, you want to watch Fellowship? I'd be like, hell yeah.
Well, Ashley, when the last time we watched it, which I think was about a year ago.
It was last year, yeah.
Every time we rewatch these, we're always like, man, these are
so good.
These are really good.
I mean, this is the one of the trilogy that's on the AFI top 100 list.
It is.
This is the one.
It is. Well, because I think they're looking for easy access points.
Yep.
But I'm going to give this a 4. It is a classic.
It is. Absolutely. It's a modern classic, which is a phrase that I hate.
But. It is a modern classic. It will be a classic. People will watch this 50 years from now.
For sure.
Simply because of the literary. And I think the technology, the acting, the storytelling, the look, all hold up.
This is lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. Ashley, what's your rating?
I'm giving them all 5 Bregos. I'll tell you that right. I'll give this 20 Bregos.
Give it 6 Bregos. 6 out of 5.
6 out of 5
Give
Bregos.
It 6 out of 5 Bregos.
6 out of 5 Bregos.
Break the scale.
And so we usually end, but I think we've just said it, you know, with what the legacy of this movie is.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's really any more that we can say. I mean, it changed the game.
I would say to anybody out there.
And it proves that nothing is unadaptable.
I agree.
And I think Dune also picks up that torch.
You know what, Ashley? That is it. That is the legacy of this movie.
Oh, thank you.
This movie proved, because Lord of the Rings before this was like several of those, like Dune, like Watchmen.
I mean, if you've seen the Ralph Bakshi movie, then you know.
Like Foundation, that many people would be like, you cannot adapt this.
Yeah.
And they adapted it. And won frickin' Oscars for doing it.
It also, counting for inflation, is the 5th highest grossing film of all time.
This The Fellowship is?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
I thought Return of the King made more money. Am I wrong on that?
All it says is it's the 5th highest of all time.
I don't
have the rest of the list.
We'll save that for Return of the King.
2 years from now.
Yeah, yeah. Hashtag GHL Return of the King.
Yes.
Yes. 6 hours, 2 episodes. Yes.
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 Is that it?
That's it.
Cool. Are we moving on? Are we doing a recommended reading of this? It's just the movie.
We'll do recommended viewing.
Geekcastlelesson.com/recommended reading. It's going to be very trunky.
Yeah. It's going to be the trilogy of movies and the trilogy of books.
Oh, cool.
That's what it's going to be. I
bet there's an art book or something like that.
Yeah. We'll find something, right. But that's the most important stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing a teaching tweet because I want to save my teaching tweet for when we do Return of the King.
So bother Ashley for 2 years on that one.
It's going to be a 2-hour long teaching tweet.
Yeah.
So I guess we are moving into honor roll, Jason.
You know, there's a weird, part of my head where, you know, I'm like, okay, Return of the King will be 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always that, like, you know, will we still be podcasting 2 years from now? And I'm like, yeah, we will be. But then I'm like, but once we do Return of the King, is that it? Can we ever top that episode? Like, if we do like a 6-hour episode of Return of the King, can we ever top it?
Maybe we should make it a thing.
Do we continue post Return of the King?
Yeah.
Will the return of the pod happen? Now, listeners, I'm not saying I love doing this podcast, and this is me just talking in my ear. We're not going to end the podcast. Relax our babies. Relax our Hobbit babies, our Mind University students. Podcast is not going anywhere. I'm just in my head knowing how good that movie is and thinking about our podcast. And I've had a lot of fun on this episode. I'm going like, can we ever top that episode? You know,
I'll probably cry on that episode, honestly.
Okay, so
we're going to talk about Anduril.
Are we going to honor roll now?
We're going to go to honor roll.
Okay, so listeners, we do this special thing that if you want to journey like a fellowship over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review, not only do you help other listeners find the show by promoting the Apple algorithm, we're going to read your 5-star review on the air. And if you're an international listener, send us your review, do a little screenshot, send it to geekculturelesson@gmail.com because we can't see international listeners.
Yes. So we have two people joining the honor roll today.
Two Americans. Of course.
Two Americans. Are.
Of course.
How like the Americans to only do Americans. From Weston227. Are you Weston Barr? If you are, let me know. They say, Jason and Ashley Lockett, down, all in caps. I found this killer podcast about halfway through Earth One's recent brush with the end of the world, aka COVID. That was very funny.
Well written.
I finally took my long-awaited deep dive into nerdom and needed something to help me learn all the ins and outs of the comic universe while I taught myself how to make Action Figure Spotlight my own custom action figures. Wait.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
you
whoa.
You make custom action whoa. Figures?
Whoa, whoa. Who is this person?
Weston227.
Weston227. If you are still listening to our podcast, I need to see pictures.
Email geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
We need pictures.
Also, priceless, please.
Yeah. I got
links
some customs.
To your store.
Yeah.
I'm like halfway through the review.
Sorry.
I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to this dynamic duo for helping me pass the last year and half of the lockdowns and for gifting me with hours of content to fill in my massive comic knowledge gaps and inspire me to create what I've always loved. These two are hilarious, and my favorite thing has been hopping around the episode timelines and piecing together the GHL evolution. Very much in the same way I've done with the comics continuity.
A lot of weird jokes. Yeah, would show up.
I would love a bit more X-Men, especially Magneto and or Rogue. Friend, we did a Magneto episode.
Did we?
We did.
Okay.
In year one. Not a Rogue episode,
all right,
though.
We could do a Rogue episode.
Thanks for the level up, super friends. Keep locking it down. Well, thank you, Weston, for your sweet message.
That was cool, Weston. Thank you.
They are also joined by Gabster 2021, who says, seriously, you must listen. When I discovered this podcast, I really didn't know much about comics and continuity, but when Jason and Ashley are teaching me stuff about comics, there's something that I love, especially Jason's voices and their inside jokes. I fully recommend 10 out of 10. So Weston 227 and Gabster 2021, welcome. Welcome, 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 welcome into the Teacher's Lounge. And Professor Jason, what's going on in there today?
Professor Elisar is here to teach sword fighting.
How do you know the name Elisar?
I read. I read books,
you've
actually.
You've impressed me twice.
but he's careful. He's got all his broadswords in today. So,
that's true. That's the name of my iPad.
Broadsword?
Elisar. Oh.
A couple have clunked over on Jeremy Skinner, who is sleeping on the floor. The teacher's on still.
Yeah. So. Poor Jeremy. Someone should help him.
We only record Justice League once a month. So we let him stay there and then he wakes up and he comes in, you know.
He's like our Fonzie.
He's gone on a couple of days with Catherine Hahn, Professor Hahn.
Ooh.
That's happened.
Honestly, I love it for them.
Yeah, I think they would work.
They would have adorable children.
Yeah, they would. Yes. If you want to join the Teacher's Lounge and with Professor Elisar and all the crazy shenanigans, there's 2,000 people in this already. Go over to Apple Podcasts, like I said, and subscribe and follow. And if you have a Lord of the Rings fan out there that you think will really enjoy this podcast, please share it with them. That's how we grow the pod, by you guys sharing it and saying, this pod is awesome. So we appreciate the reviews, appreciate everything out there. Ashley, if they want to suggest the Two Towers episode or hashtag GHL Two Towers, yes, where can they do it on social media?
You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
Don't forget, we're going to have an extra GHL over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. You can follow Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. And Ashley, we're hashtag stick around, where we make sure you stuck through all the plugs. What are we talking about?
We're talking about the Beatles.
Oh, the Beatles.
The Beatles.
This is going to add another hour to the podcast.
I don't think so. So the Beatles in the 60s wanted to adapt The Lord of the Rings themselves.
Yep. And Stanley Kubrick.
And Stanley Kubrick was going to direct it.
Yep.
Well, actually, he declined because he was making 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, yeah. It was going to be in the early 70s. It was before they broke up.
Yes. So yeah. I wanted to ask who we would cast the Beatles as.
Okay. So just to be
me,
clear.
It's very easy.
Just to be clear, we have John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
We have Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ringo Starr.
Mm-hmm.
And we have George Harrison. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we have four hobbits, which are Frodo, Sam, Merry, and Pippin.
I mean, they don't have to be the hobbits.
Oh, interesting.
They could be anyone.
I
think we have two hobbits.
Okay, Ashley. All right. So you think this is very clear. Please make your pitch.
Paul is Frodo.
Of course.
Ringo is Sam.
Ringo is Sam.
John is Gandalf.
Okay.
And George is Boromir.
Interesting. I think George would be Saruman.
But he's so cute.
See, it's so funny. So I took this as they would be the four hobbits, but you're probably
That's the logical thing.
John
right?
Lennon.
But John doesn't give me hobbit vibes.
John would go for Gandalf.
Yeah.
See, so like, okay, let's try this. What if they could only be the four hobbits? Is John Sam?
John has...
Or is John Merry?
No, John is Frodo, Paul is Sam.
That's what I think.
Ringo's Pippin, and George is Merry.
That's what I think it is. Yep.
Yeah. Even though I don't like John for Frodo,
mm-hmm.
to me, just with the power dynamics, because like Paul's just much more of a Frodo.
George and John are the hardest to cast.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're grumpy.
Okay, hold on a second. Let's see. You said you think John is going to be Gandalf?
I think John would want to be Gandalf. John would want to be the most powerful man in the universe because he's John Lennon.
I'm saying a wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins, nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
I know you are late all the time.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. If you've seen Get Back, you know that.
Me and Yoko.
And then Frodo's, I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened. Let's find some other Frodo lines. They only have that one line. I'm looking for other lines.
Say, all right, then keep your secrets.
All right, then keep your secrets. Go back, Sam. I'm going to Mordor alone.
Do Ringo saying, I can't carry it, but I can carry you.
I can't carry it, but I can carry you.
This is pretty good. George is the hardest one to do.
We had one, yes, but what about second breakfast?
George is the hardest Beatle to do a voice of.
Embrace the power of the ring.
No, it's John. He's
it's
hard.
Because George is not quite John, but it's close to John because he's higher. Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking for another,
A Balrog, a demon of the ancient world. The foe is beyond any of you. Run!
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I made a promise, Mr. Frodo. A promise. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't mean to.
There's not as many Frodo lines in here, which is kind of disappointing. It's all I never wish the ring had come to me.
I wish none of this had ever happened.
Yep. There you go.
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir. Honest, that's Sam.
So there you go. The Beatles, Lord of the Rings. I wish they would have made it, actually. I think it would have been great.
It would have been a disaster, and I would have loved it.
It would have been a catastrophe as well.
But it would have been awesome.
There's also there's a USSR film. They adapted Lord of the Rings, which I know you can find on YouTube, which kind of went viral a couple years ago, if anybody's interested.
Also, if you've never seen the Ralph Bakshi stuff.
That's the animated film from the 70s.
It is madness.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Boring.
It's fun.
It's very boring.
Take it with your intoxicant of choice.
All right.
That's how I would recommend.
Cool. This might be our longest GHL ever.
Well, we did this in the spirit of Peter Jackson.
Well earned.
And yep. J.R.R. Tolkien.
Well earned. I'm telling you, the Return of the King episode is going to be 6 hours long.
And I only picked like the 5 most important plot points.
Yep. Yep. We should go scene by scene. We should do like a live commentary. You sound like a ring wraith there. What are you doing?
I don't know. I'm just being dumb.
Hold on a second.
Okay. This is the longest.
And what about very old friends, Maka?
Not Maka.
Who would be Bilbo in this Beatles version?
George Martin.
I see. I think it
or
would be,
Brian Epstein, probably.
I was gonna say. I was like, I think it might be Peter Sellers.
Oh, are you gonna waste Peter Sellers on a little part though? Mm-hmm.
Well, that might be all the only thing he would do in this goofy
well,
movie.
Well, so in their adaptation, you cast him as Tom Bombadil.
Sure.
That's how you get Peter Sellers in there.
They'd probably make Tom Bombadil like Mick Jagger's or Eric Clapton, actually.
No, they'd probably make him one of the Pythons.
Oh, that's fair. I don't know if they know the Pythons at this point, but that's fair. That's fair.
Depends on the year they make it, yeah. I suppose.
All right, that's it, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to our very long Fellowship of the Ring. I'm Jason Frodo Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Ashley, you need to close us out.
Class is now dismissed.